My name's Helen Shield. I'm sure you've seen pictures of a new easel today announcing a birth, but have you seen pictures from NASA's babies? Scott Pook has. He's a Launceston-born space flight historian. He's been watching a lot more than a hospital doorway. Hello, Scott.
Good evening, Helen. 3 days, 2 hours, 17 minutes and 16 seconds before the Cassini spacecraft takes another look at the Saturnian moon Titan after taking a nostalgic look home in the last couple of days. We have some wonderful images on the NASA website of the Earth taken from 900 million miles out in space.
Oh.
And not only that, we have a twin. We have from Mercury, some 60 million miles from Earth, going sunward, images of the Earth. These are the first ones that have ever been taken from so close to the Sun, looking back at the Earth. But the outstanding image has to be the image that's come down from Cassini of the Earth and the Moon, taken from the planet Saturn.
And what can you see in that?
I'm looking at that image right at the moment on my computer screen, and it is simply mind-blowing. You have the black of surface of the planet Saturn. It's actually a shot taken from behind Saturn. You can see some of the Saturnian rings, the beautiful Saturnian rings.
Oh.
And just off the limb of the rings, you can see a very, very small bluish white dot. This is at great magnification. That blue and white dot is the Earth, taken from 900 million miles out in space. And it's sobering to think that everyone who you know, everyone around the world, all resides on that tiny little blue dot.
How small are you feeling today?
Extremely small, but this is not the furthest we've ever been from the Earth to take a photograph. That reward goes to the Voyager 1 spacecraft back in 1991, which took a picture from 3 billion kilometres out in what was called at the time the Solar System Family Portrait. Every planet in a multiple exposure image, with the exception of Mercury because it's too close to the Sun, and Pluto because it's too small to show up in the image.
Yeah, it's been knocked off as a planet since then anyway.
It has. It unfortunately at the moment is a planetoid or a planetesimal, but check back with us in about 15 months' time.
Ooh.
When we see images for the first time up close at Pluto.
Okay. So when these images have come out today from Saturn and Mercury, how long have those spacecrafts been travelling to get to the point where they can take those images?
Cassini's been operating out at Saturn for almost 10 years now. It's a joint project between NASA and the European Space Agency, and it's been taking a long-term look at the planet Saturn and all of its satellites and the rings and everything that goes to make up the Saturnian system. By understanding satellites such as Jupiter and Saturn, we can understand better the formation of the solar system. So that is one of our main objectives by doing these long-term missions at the two major gas giants in the outer solar system. From the point of view of the Messenger spacecraft at Mercury, it's been out there a somewhat shorter time. It's about 3 years into its mission, but it's only been on station at Mercury for about the last 12 months or so. Because Mercury is so close to the Sun, it's very difficult to put a spacecraft into orbit around there. We actually had to do a couple of swing-bys back past Venus to sort of slow that spacecraft down a bit to the point where we could inject it into an orbit around Mercury, but it's doing great science out there for us.
Is there any reason both photos came through on the same day?
This was very much a coordinated effort between the Cassini engineers and the Messenger engineers. It was realised that we had this window of opportunity with Cassini, that the Earth would be in just the right position to be photographed from the spacecraft's cameras. And just by pure luck, it turned out that Messenger was able to perform a similar function as well. Both images would have arrived back on the Earth at the Deep Space Tracking Station, probably here in Canberra. There are two others, one at Goldstone in California and one at Madrid in Spain. So once it took a few days to get these images out because we have to not only get them down from the spacecraft, we have to process them, get out all the radio hash that interferes with the signal across so many million miles of space, and basically clean the pictures up and digitally enhance them to produce the stunning images which we're now seeing on the NASA website and on news sites around the world.
What does it get you thinking about when you look at images of the Earth from 90 million kilometres away?
Well, one thing it does for me personally is it makes me think of how small we are in the great cosmic arena. The astronomer Carl Sagan once described the photograph from the Voyager spacecraft that it does make us all pause for thought to think about where we are in the overall scheme of the universe. We are a very, very small stage in a great cosmic arena. It is a truly stunning, thought-provoking image that we've now got from the Cassini spacecraft.
spaceflight historian Scott Pook with you on your ABC tonight at 17 to 8. Now, the second space issue at the moment is about a mystery that's been solved over something found a year back. What was it?
About a year ago, the founder of Amazon, a gentleman by the name of Jeff Bezos, actually mounted an expedition to the Atlantic Ocean in the waters well off Cape Canaveral, and it's the area where the Saturn rockets splashed down once they'd boosted the Apollo missions off the launch pad on their trajectory to the moon. He managed to retrieve a number of different components that were brought to the surface, and for the past year they've been undergoing preservation at Kansas Cosmosphere in Hutchinson, Kansas, in the United States. It has just been announced by the Amazon people in the last couple of days that they have been able to definitively identify some of the parts recovered as having come from the Saturn V first stage rocket that launched Apollo 11 off the launch pad some 44 years ago. So this is an absolutely stunning find for somebody like myself who deals in space archaeology and spaceflight history to be able to identify these parts after being on the bottom of the ocean for so long.
How long were they on the bottom of the ocean?
43 years. Until they were recovered last year, and at quite a considerable depth. And you've got to understand, these things have fallen from about 20 miles out. They've fallen down into the ocean. They've been going at maximum speeds. They've literally broken apart, shattered when they've hit the ocean, and the individual pieces have sunk to the bottom of the Atlantic, where they've remained, being damaged by all sorts of ocean currents and gradually starting to rust away. And the fact that we can now find these identification plates, which are so crucial to identifying spaceflight hardware, is truly amazing. And the people in Kansas have just done a fantastic job in matching up all the information to say definitively, yes, what we have here is Apollo 11 hardware. This is going to be something that will fascinate a lot of people for a lot of time, and it's a piece of spaceflight history we never, ever expected to have back.
Are rocket parts ever used as spare parts for another craft?
They have been. The Apollo spacecraft in the later part of the Apollo program, NASA was running so short of funds that they would take parts off a flight-flown spacecraft like Apollo 8 or Apollo 12 and put them into a spacecraft for Apollo 16 or 17. And from the point of view of somebody who deals in spaceflight history, that creates a problem because here we are 40 years later. We want to put the spacecraft back as they were when they literally came off the assembly line. And if you have parts from Apollo 13 now in Apollo 17 or in one of the Skylab command modules or the command module that did the joint mission with the Russians in 1975, it becomes a real puzzle. I've spent many trips to the United States chasing around, trying to find out where these components are and trying to match them back up with the correct spacecraft. It's like trying to do a jigsaw puzzle without having the box with the picture on it in front of you. You have to go to a NASA master catalogue. You might have to go to a contractor and get their master catalogues of what parts they put in what spacecraft and try and match the serial numbers all back up. So what these people have done in Kansas is truly amazing, to find the ID plate, which is so crucial to this, and to be able to say definitively, yes, this is Apollo 11 hardware. I'm very, very envious of them. I wish I'd make the discovery myself.
Will they be on display somewhere?
They will be on display with these components because they've been identified as Apollo 11. Naturally, the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. will have first refusal on them, and I can't see them saying no to it. There is some talk that some components will be on display up in Seattle and possibly also California as well. I don't think this is the last we'll hear of the Amazon people. I'm certain sure they're going to go back to the Atlantic and keep fishing and recover more hardware. This is just the beginning of what will be an ongoing project.
Scott, thank you.
Thank you so much, Helen.
Scott Pook, space flight historian, Launceston born, on 936 ABC Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.